And now it's time to play the game where we ask accomplished people about things they don't know anything about. The game is called Not My Job. Speaking of achievements, our guest tonight has had such a long and distinguished career in every variety of media, he's probably left more jobs than most journalists could ever dream of having. Keith Olbermann has been a sportscaster on TV and radio. He is the guy who pretty much invented SportsCenter as we know it, complete with those increasingly baroque home run calls. These days, he's the host of his own acclaimed talk show, The Countdown, with Keith Olbermann on MSNBC. Keith, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter, and thank you for crediting me with inventing SportsCenter. All my friends at ESPN will be happy to hear that.
I know. Our job is to piss them off even more about you.
Well, work like for, that's possible.
Yeah, we've heard.
Work for Al Gore with the internet, you know. I mean, that pretty much put him right over the top
well,
in
now,
the election, didn't
I will
it?
Clarify, you did not invent SportsCenter. However, it was you, if I'm not mistaken, that you and Dan Patrick in the early 90s who sort of made it what it is today with the banter and the fast pace and those amazingly, increasingly strange home run calls that you guys came up with.
Yes, I'll take that as my answer, yes. Right. That's the answer is a yes to that true-false question.
Right, and you've gone on to do many, many different things, many different networks. These days you're on MSNBC, of course, with The Countdown. Now, for those who don't know it, who haven't seen it yet, how does it stand out from the other, you know, talking head shows, talk shows on cable?
We tend to stick largely to the truth.
Ah. You think there's a market for that?
Well, I don't know about that. So far, we're doing about a tenth as well as one of those shows where they just make the stuff up every night. But we do a newscast that has a lot of serious stuff in it, and we'll do political analysis and such, but we also spend a minimum of 20% on an average night doing ridiculous gag stories and celebrity stories and, you know, things like Michael Jackson puppet theater.
Yeah, that was great, actually. You did your report, I saw this, on the Michael Jackson trial by putting little pictures of the protagonists on popsicle sticks and waving them in front of the camera.
Peter, yeah. Apropos of an earlier question, they did Saddam Hussein trial puppet theater.
Yep. Did you really?
Oh, yeah, we did, because we had him reenact the you're out of order scene from And Justice for All. We had him play the Al Pacino role as they were dragging him off. The number of union regulations you can get around when you introduce popsicle sticks into the news is just extraordinary. That's all I can tell you.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, the people who have been very successful in cable news, I'm thinking of the Bill O'Reillys, the Chris Matthews, they're known for being
loud.
Yeah, I was going to say confrontational. I was going to say, you know, they're constantly on crusades. They're picking fights with people. I mean, if that's such a standard model of success, aren't you ever tempted to pick it up?
Well, success is overrated. I mean, I've achieved what I wanted to do in terms of success, and I shouldn't say this because my employers will suddenly realize that perhaps I'm not, from their viewpoint, giving my best. But my view is to do a good hour of broadcasting, and you know, somebody else is responsible for people watching it or not watching it. So I leave that in other hands, and at least I know I can sleep at night, and when I announce my impending retirement, as Mr. O'Reilly did, people will not stand up and cheer.
The Republic is saved, they'll say. Speaking of Mr. O'Reilly, you don't seem to get along well with him.
Well, he's an idiot.
Oh, my.
As I said, we deal mostly just in facts.
Yeah, apparently. Have you ever had a confrontation with him on air or off? You've said things about
him. No, because, of course, for him to recognize that any of the things I have said or done about him have any impact would be to, you know, blow the whole Bill O'Reilly thing to acknowledge that anybody might have an impact on him. So there's never been a confrontation. And also, given that I am approximately his height, thus not, you know, like Al Franken, somewhat vertically challenged, he would never take on a fight with me because there would be the chance he might lose.
That is interesting. I mean, because, I mean, you say that he won't recognize your attacks on him, but I remember, for example, he went on Terry Gross's show here in NPR, and not only did he walk out on Terry Gross because he felt that she was being too aggressive. Terry Gross.
She came in wearing the gang tats.
Yeah,
you know,
I know.
And it was just,
and I know Terry. I love Terry. Terry is 5 feet, she wishes, okay? That's how tall Terry is. He proceeded to, like, condemn Terry Gross for a week. He got a good week of condemnatory rants out of that.
I'm telling you that 16-inch height advantage factors into the factor, if you will. That's the way, you know, I mean, how many of us have ever been in a schoolyard? That's the way bullies work. They do not go picking on people who are taller than they are.
Thinking back to schoolyards, I thought this really kind of explained Al Franken. That's a kid you just, even though your conscience bothered you about it, you couldn't help. Pick on that kid, you know? The little pear-shaped kid with a big mouth, you know?
But he was a high school wrestler. Speaking of Al now, I know this because I had to step in between him and Alex Trebek on an edition of Jeopardy where Trebek said something and Al made a move.
Al went for him?
Wait a minute.
Trebek.
Wait a minute.
I grabbed Al around the chest and went, my God, he's going to get away from me. He really can probably still wrestle. I think I'd like to see that.
He's just to sit on you. Forget the wrestling.
Al Franken got into a smackdown almost with Alex Trebek?
It was a very unpleasant edition of Jeopardy. It was one of those ones that they don't, well, actually they have shown it way too many times on airplanes, and I forget who the third challenger was, but it was Al versus me, and something or another, some wise remark that Trebek made, and Al just went, that's it, Trebek, and it was suddenly, we're in a Saturday Night Live show. I'm coming to get you, Trebek. And I just figured, okay, I'm going to insert myself in this bit of humor, and that's where I grabbed Al around the chest and went, my God, he's got concrete.
There's one little other thing I just got to go over with you. I've always wanted to ask you about this, and this is of course the incident now about 10 years ago. I bring you back to Yankee Stadium. Chuck Knobloch playing second base.
Oh, yeah.
It was the end of his career. He was having a strange problem. He forgot how to throw the ball.
You mean when Mom got hit in the head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened exactly?
Mom got hit in the head with the ball.
Chuck Knobloch throws the ball from second base to first. It flies over the head of the first baseman by a good 10 feet.
No, it never even got to the first baseman. If it had gotten to the first baseman, there wouldn't have been a problem. But he was so wild that he bounced it off the roof of the Yankee dugout. And it did a little reverse English, spun up, and hit my mother in the bridge of her glasses.
Oh, no.
Where she has been and we have been sitting since I think we got season tickets to Yankee Stadium in 1972 and have had them ever since, and she go to all the weekday and weekend day games, and she was seated there, and she got conked by that throw. And just as a punchline to it, I was doing the game of the week for Fox, the baseball game of the week broadcast, and I was in a studio in Los Angeles when the play occurred, doing the highlights of other games during the baseball broadcast. And sure enough, I'm sitting here watching these monitors of all the games that are going on, and I see the ball go into the seats that way at Yankee Stadium, and I know all the camera angles and all the stadium angles, and I said to no one in particular, that probably hit my mother. And they all laughed, and I went, no, you don't understand. That probably hit my mother. And the next shot was of a woman being led up the stands with her hand on her forehead, and everybody laughed. I went, no, that's my mother. And everybody got very quiet suddenly, and we put this highlight together, and the guys, Joe Buck and Tim McCarver, who do the games for Fox, threw it to me in the studio, and they had no idea what was coming, and I said, the Chuck Knobloch throwing problem has gotten personal. Ground ball from Chicago's Singleton. Chris Singleton throws it into the stands and hits, and right on the edit, my mother. I said, Mom's a gamer. She'll be back tomorrow. Back to you, Joe and Tim. Dead silence.
Yeah. So the next time you saw Mr. Knobloch...
He never said a word about it. Joe Torre, the manager of the Yankees, was on the phone to me in Los Angeles the next day asking how my mother was. And all the Yankee players, I still get asked, it's 5 years now, and I still get asked questions about it. I had to tell the whole story to Randy Johnson the other day at Yankee Stadium before they were eliminated. But Chuck Knobloch never said boo about it because, well, he really couldn't confront the fact that he'd hit my mother in the head with a ball. And people say, well, what are the odds against that happening? And I said, my mother's been going to games since 1934, and the worst that had ever happened to her was she got some beer on her once during a fight from two other fans. The odds, in fact, were probably down to about 2-1.
Knobloch should become a verb of some kind just for that incident, although meaning I'm not sure exactly what.
Yeah, in the family, it already is, Peter.
Well, Keith Olbermann, we are delighted to have you here. Now, we have invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Swedish Academy? We don't need no Swedish Academy.
Every year, the week before those other awards are given out in Sweden, a magazine known as the Annals of Improbable Research hands out the really important prizes, the Ig Nobel Awards. Real prizes for real scientific achievements into the things we really need to know about. We're going to ask you three questions about advances on the hidden frontiers of science. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice, on their home answering machine. So, Carl, who is Keith Olbermann playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Ellen Kingsley Hirschfield in Houston, Texas.
Ready to go?
I'm ready to get knob-locked.
Here's your first question. A pair of scientists won an award for their research into the brain activities of the common locust. Their experiment consisted of monitoring the locust's brain while the locust had what done to it? A. They showed the locust film of locusts mating, that is, locust erotica. B. They showed the helpless insect clips from Star Wars. Or C. They played it music by New Age piano master Yanni.
Well, obviously, if you're going to give an award to somebody, an Ig Nobel Prize, it can't be for something as legitimate as showing videotapes of mating to the animals who are mating. So it's got to be one of the last two. All right, fine. I'll go with the Star Wars B.
You're right, sir.
Oh.
They wanted to see how its little locust brain reacted to moving images. And what is more moving than the original Star Wars?
Well, I believe a locust wrote some of the dialogue for the fourth one.
Yeah. What was interesting was, after repeated viewings of Star Wars, the locust lost its ability to relate to female members of the species. It was... just wanted to stay in the lab and collect action figures. Sad. All right. Very good. Next question. The biology Ig Nobel went to an international consortium of scientists who, in pursuit of knowledge, painstakingly, over the course of years, did what? A. Put more than 100 different kinds of frogs under stress and then smelled them. B. Tasted... That was A.
Yeah.
Smelled stressed frogs. B. Would be tasted 467 varieties of beetle dung. Or C. Collected 68 different kinds of roadside weeds, dried them, and smoked them to see what would happen.
Well, I've done that.
PJ, I usually refer to that experiment as 1973.
We must have devoted the whole year to that.
Well, I don't think there are 467 different kinds of beetle dung, personally. Not to my experience, anyway. Around here in Secaucus, New Jersey, there are not. I'll go with C, roadside weeds.
No, I'm afraid it was the frogs.
That's close.
That's good, because now we get the explanation.
Yes, no, they would like stress out the frogs and smell them.
What would they do? Like, cause them financial harm? Or what? How the hell do you stress out a frog besides...
Make them watch Star Wars.
Yeah. The resulting paper is called, quote, A Survey of Frog Odorous Secretions.
I have it right here. I should have known.
I know.
Here in my research file.
Did they make little tubes, or did they have to, like, get their face right down?
I believe they just got up close and personal with the frogs.
Wow.
All right, now you've won for two, so if you get this one last right, you will win our prize. Last question. The Ig Nobel winning scientists, of course, are all advancing the frontiers of human knowledge. The winner of the chemistry Ig Nobel solved what age-old question? A. If you eat Pop Rocks and then drink Coke,
oh, no.
Will your tummy really explode? B. Do you swim faster in water or in syrup? Or C, is it physically possible to make a model with airplane glue without smearing it all over the outside?
Oh, this is difficult, as if the other two were not. I don't know. This one is a wild guess. I'll go with Pop Rocks and Coke.
No. It was swim faster in water or in syrup. Well,
something we actually used on this show.
Yes, we did, in fact.
I think I once had that as a bluff.
We did.
Yeah.
This we covered on the show. We're glad to hear that these researchers at the University of Minnesota have been honored for it. What they did was they took a swimming pool, and he took the swim team, and he filled the swimming pool with this chemical, which made it all kind of goopy. And he set the swim team to swimming, and he measured the results against the results in water, and it turns out makes no difference. Swim just as fast or as slow, depending on who you are, in syrup or in water.
When the girls swim in the syrup, that's called the Minnesota Vikings have a day off.
Exactly.
That was a different kind of experiment.
Carl, how did Keith Olbermann do on our quiz?
Keith needed at least two correct answers to win for Ellen Kingsley Hirschfield. He had just one.
Oh, I'm sorry, Keith.
I'm sorry to Ellen. My apologies. I don't know. I'll call you up and do an impression of Carl if that's what you want.
All right. I've heard you just kill with that at parties. In Secaucus.
There are no parties in Secaucus. Let me just say that for the record.
Keith Olbermann is the host of MSNBC's Countdown. It's seen weeknights at 8 p.m. Eastern. Keith, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Keith. She blinded me with science.